You're listening to the Yes, I'm Still Sober podcast with John Rabin. And here we are at the Yes, I'm Still Sober podcast, episode 141. Thank you for joining me. Hello, I'm John Rabin. And we're back. I did not feel great about last week's episode, but a friend had messaged me and went, "Hey, great episode." So what the fuck do I know? but because of it, I didn't do that thing where that app that posts the clip of the episode and then you advertise it on IG or whatever, like do the little thing, the little promo clip that I pay for. I just was like, I don't feel great about this episode, so I'm not gonna push it. And then I got roughly the same amount of people that listened to the episode. So it's like, it's almost, you know, it's like going through the motions of doing different things that promote the podcast just because that's what people do. Thank you, water. It doesn't matter. It's just like, just kind of go through it because maybe one more person gets curious and they have the personality and the taste that this kind of thing makes them go, yeah, this is what I want. I want to listen to this about addiction, about just random things that happen in this guy's life who's been sober for 8 years, and but he lacks the positivity that I find annoying, which is great, because as I've said multiple times, you know, it's more of a finding a balance. Like you don't have to be overtly positive, but you can. But that doesn't mean you have to be negative. You don't have to be like, everything sucks, but I'm sober for now, or whatever the hell. Like that's not great either. But that forced positivity that grates on everyone. I think it grates on everyone. I think friends and family of somebody who's newly sober are really appreciative of somebody who gets in that, who's in that early pink cloud phase where they notice immediate results, immediate, you know, life being turned around, and it's like, oh my God, you know, if I'm not passing out and throwing up and peeing on everything, I get things done and my life is not as much out of control. Yeah. So that they're really upbeat and positive, and everybody's like, yeah, good for Daryl, right? Yay, Daryl. And then, but if they continue to be overtly positive, it's like, Daryl's kind of grating on my nerves. All right, man, get back to me later. Let's get the fuck out of here. But they don't say that. They just inside is like, oh, God. Is he going to quote stuff? it's like, oh no, he's going to quote a thing. Oh, okay, Daryl, what'd you read? Or Gary. Gary's going to tell me something that he learned. Shut up, Gary. Hey, real quick. I was just in traffic and I saw this. And now on stage for a stand-up act, for those of you who don't know, I am a comedian. Or I was before this fucking pandemic hit. But you know what? At heart, I am still a... Shut up, kitty. Cat's just staring at me like, really? Do you have to raise your voice? But I saw it on stage. I would never go, I saw this bumper sticker. You know, what's up with that? But, you know, it's a podcast. Podcasts, you can do hacky shit. It's fine. Nobody ever says, his material on his podcast isn't that original. We're not there yet. Maybe one day people will get elitist about their podcast and the writing, he said with air quotes. I saw a bumper sticker, or it was like this round sticker on the back of a car, and it said, it just says, "Live a great story." So I've got a story for you guys. Once upon a time, there was a man who had a porn star mustache. Already fucked it up. It was a man who had a porn star mustache, and he drove a BMW convertible. And this man's life was going so great that he continued to stare at his phone even when the light turned green. Man, this story sucks. I agree. This story does suck. People who have bumper stickers tend to do things in their car that conflict with the bumper sticker that conveys their perceived identity. And I can say with all my heart that guy's story sucks. So thanks. Thanks for the bumper sticker. I hope TikTok was worth me missing a light. Why don't you just sit there with the top down? Like, oh, life's great. I'm in no rush. And you shouldn't either. 20 cars behind me. Beautiful. This is not related, but I guess it could be related. It's not. I didn't talk about it last week. I totally forgot about it. But my wife and I went to a rage room because it was something that she's always wanted to do, which is just break shit. I mean, we're talking computer monitors, bottles, computer keyboards was my favorite, honestly. Just all these different, the computer monitor, but the keyboard was more fun because the keys just go flying when you hit it with a bat. And she went to town and really enjoyed herself and was actually confused a little bit as to, she's like, why didn't you enjoy it? And the thing was, I did enjoy myself, but I'm very controlled about stuff. And honestly, I personally think that going through recovery and, hitting rock bottom and all the other stuff with addiction and everything else, almost dying several times, that right now I don't have a whole lot of pent up rage anymore because I've kind of done the, recovery and therapy. So I don't have a lot of pent up shit. So it was more like, for me, I was like controlled. I was controlled smashing things, which is bizarre, but it's like, all right, hey, be careful. Everybody be careful. And it's like, no, you got to cut loose. It's a rage room. Cut to like a week later. It was like midnight and I had taken out the trash and ironically had just taken out trash. This truck pulls into our apartment complex and pulls over to our dumpsters and starts dumping all this garbage into our dumpster, as well as like a mattress and a refrigerator just on the side, which doesn't look great. And I honestly didn't care about the dumpster and the mattress. I really don't. You can dump stuff on the side, fine. It does cause work for other people. But on a personal level, what irritates me is filling up the dumpster with your garbage. So when I have to take my trash out, it's full because the garbage men aren't coming for a few days. So you're screwing with my stuff by doing that. So I yelled at them from the balcony of my apartment. It was just, hey, get the fuck out of here. Like I really, which is, and it was a couple, this redneck couple, clearly, Really? It was a redneck couple dumping an old refrigerator at somebody right next to somebody else's dumpster who doesn't live there? Yeah, it was a redneck couple. And as soon as I started yelling at them, she like was like, "Oh shit," kind of like getting ready to drive away. But he got mad that I was yelling, so he just kind of like threw the refrigerator down out of the truck. He just pulled it and just kind of kicked it. And you know, it was like kind of like in a "fuck you, man" kind of thing, but it's like whatever. So I yelled at them and they got in the car and was trying to drive away, but because that guy just haphazardly threw the fridge in the way, they couldn't back out to leave. So we had to get back out and then drag the fridge to the side where he was going to go before he just went, "Nah, fuck you." But he was like, "Oh no, fuck me. I fucked me." You know, and he just moved he had to move the fridge out of the way. And then they drove off. And I bring this up because I had more of a release yelling at those two people than I did at the rage room, which makes me think that a rage room should actually have people who are so self-centered, they screw over other people with their actions. They should have them sit down and let you yell at them. That should be the rage room. You should be able to yell at people who are truly selfish and self-centered and are screwing over society, like proven. Not like the quote-unquote Karens or anybody else who just, you know, who yell and you're like, "Really? You're taking it out on some poor sap who makes, you know, 10 bucks an hour?" Not that. People who are truly garbage. Well, not total garbage, but they act garbage-like, and they get caught, and their punishment should be that random people get to yell at them. Because that's way more satisfying, by the way. There's no satisfying for yelling at people online anymore. For their trying to get validation and likes is not, it's nowhere near what it's like to yell at people who are truly fucking up. I just said, it's like, I feel so much better. So I don't know. That should be the rage room. You can break all the glass you want, but man, you know, you breaking somebody's ego is that's something. You know what that reminds me of? That reminds me of I had this theory, and it's not a good theory. It's an interesting idea. It's not a good one. Also, it's more of a fantasy kind of thing where every person got to pick a nemesis. That it's important to have a nemesis. You have one. So it's like a national registry of your name and who your nemesis is. And the law would be that you could be terrible and rude and say all kinds of things. Like, you couldn't break any laws. Like, physically, you couldn't assault or anything like that, but like on a level of harassment, if some things came up, like disturbing the peace or whatever, if on record the person that you were getting into it with was your nemesis, you were free to go. And the idea is you could be as shitty as you wanted to your nemesis, but you had to be nice to everybody else. And that way, people couldn't, you know, people would have to treat each other with respect and be nice, except for the one guy. And it's just, you know, they're like, "Why do you keep driving around and honking and catcalling this one person?" And he goes, "It's my nemesis." And you look and you go, "Oh, no, you know what? He's got the documentation. Let him go. That man can continue to heckle that man because, you know, And then it goes into could you change it and all this other stuff. No, it's like once you it's set. That's who it is. Clearly, this is a bad idea, but it's fun to think about. I don't know. I just thought of, just remembered that. Let's get to healthy shit, shall we? I'm feeling all right today. I hope you're feeling okay. If you're in recovery, I hope you're staying sober. If you're not in recovery, I hope you're staying sane. I hope everybody's enjoying the sun. If you're getting a lot of sun without the winter storms, we've here in Austin, Texas, it's very sunny, and we got this cool front that came in from California that was dry, so it's like no rain, but it's like in the 60s, and it's really sunny, and it's super nice out, and everybody is out, because I was just in traffic, and I can tell you, everybody is out. Even though I was only out for a little bit, I was technically out. Everybody's out there, and that's good. Get that sun. That sun is healthy. Get your vitamin D on the side. Yeah, and speaking of that, make sure you're taking your vitamin D and make sure you're taking your zinc and your supplements and you're getting exercise and you're getting sleep and you're watching out for yourself. Because clearly, no government entity or organization is watching out for you. You have to watch out for you, and it's your responsibility to take care of you, because nobody else is going to. So you watch out for you. You watch out for your friends. I know I say that a lot, but I want to remind. I just want to bring it up again because that's actually related to what I did want to talk about today. Because I was thinking about it, and I think that the majority of people that I know in this country, I think we have a problem with victimizing ourselves. And I think that we victimize ourselves, and it's society's fault, to be honest. but it is a problem. It's because you can't victimize yourself and also take responsibility. Those are like together. And what really sucks is when people notice other people doing it. And that's where you get the victim blaming from, because it's just kind of gross when you get accused of somebody. But that's the thing. Victimizing yourself has nothing to do with whether you're a victim or not. Those aren't even related. It doesn't have anything, you know, you don't like, hey, something bad happened to me. I have the excuse to victimize yourself. The people that we inspire, or that inspire us at least for me, what I've noticed are people who are clearly victims in one aspect or another, you know, stuff that's not their fault that they're having to deal with. And yet they don't use that as an excuse to feel sorry for themselves or to, you know, go a little help here or anything like they keep going. Not that that's necessarily what you should do in every case. You should totally accept help when you need it. But it, like I said, it doesn't have anything to do with it. It's taking responsibility for your life and not victimizing yourself and blaming others for every single thing. I mean, that's a mindset. And that's something that we have to take care of on our own. We can't have people accusing us. We can't have people going, hey, you need to quit victimizing yourself. It's real easy to see that in other people. I see it every day. But it's just like a lot of things. The things you see that make you upset in other people tend to be things that you do yourself. And, you know, and it reminds me, and I've been thinking about it because it reminded me of one of the big aspects of rehab, or at least the one that I went to when dealing with the heroin addiction. is the very first thing, that first week, the first thing that they do in big group and small group therapy. Small group's about 10 people, probably less. Big group was everybody. But the thing that they did that first week is, you know, have you, they had you tell your story, all the drugs you did, all the destruction, all that stuff. And then as you're going through it, people would question you to try to break down denial and excuses to make you realize that, hey man, you didn't get here on a losing streak. You're not here because you're unlucky. Like, you did this to you. That's an important thing, is that you did this. You may have had bad things happen, but you are responsible for your self-destruction and your addiction. You did this. This is not all on your dad. This is not all on your ex. Like you caused this. And that's an important thing, because you have to break all that down, all the denial down. And you have to get to the point where you're responsible, that you realize that you're at this point, you did this, you're responsible for your actions. And once you get to that point, to the mental state where you're like, fuck, I fucked up, I did this, then you can start moving forward and doing things. And this has a lot to do with, you know, when you don't do that, when you just stop doing drugs or you just stop drinking, but you don't analyze at all your behavior, that's where the term, the dry drunk kind of term, comes out, where you have somebody who's just sitting there abstaining and they're still just a miserable prick. So this is like the aspect, this is what like 12-step programs do and other things, and whether you agree with them or not, with some of the tactics, some of the some of the steps, I'm like, shouldn't this be a 6-step program, you know, whatever, like that's beside the point. The main starting point, after you realize, you know, and admit, like, fuck, I got a problem. Once you go from I have a problem to that, you know, then the next big thing is breaking down and accepting responsibility for where you are. And that's hard. It's hard to do it now. Even like it will always be hard. That never gets easier to go, I accept full responsibility every day. No, I don't. I sure as shit don't. I mean, I can give you an example. A big example in my life was, there have been a couple of people who I know, who are acquaintances, who do not, well, nobody books me now. I mean, it's a whole other world, but who, they did not ever book me for their shows, even though I was as funny, if not funnier, than the people that were getting booked. So there are people getting booked who were significantly less funny. Now, I know sense of humor but level of expertise, or level of skill level was significantly lower than mine. And I wouldn't be getting booked. And it was always, you know, this person has this problem with me, or, they think I'm too old, or still holding a grudge from whatever, you know, just all these excuses. And, you know, it's like, why can't I? And the truth of the matter is that, like, in reality, there's probably some truth to that. That's the thing about victimizing yourself, is you're not making stuff up out of nowhere. You're taking something that probably is, there's some truth to it. And you're getting rid of any of your own responsibility in that scenario. And you're putting it all on them instead of the reality, which is somewhere in the middle, which is, yeah, they probably do have a problem with you, John, but also, don't they have a problem with you because you during that whole time, you didn't work very hard at your craft. You were kind of sloppy. Also, you were kind of a drunk and an asshole when you were drunk. Don't you think maybe that had something to do with it? But mainly, if you were really, really, really working hard and hustling and getting yourself booked and writing a bunch of jokes and continuing to work very, very hard at your craft and getting to the point where you had to, you know, putting yourself at a level where you can't be ignored because you're a force to be reckoned with, then you probably get booked that way. Or by doing that, you get booked at other places and it doesn't matter. That's the other thing. Was sitting there with the mindset that, you know, I would make way more money and be way more known in stand-up comedy if this one person booked me, which is complete bullshit. Because you can look on paper at all the people who have done gigs, and you know everybody in the scene in the city who played that one gig, or you know on a regular basis, and it's like, where are they? Like, it doesn't make or break you. That's just in your head. This is the obstacle keeping me down, and that's a bunch of bullshit. And you're not taking any responsibility for why things are that way. You know, it's just really easy to do. And that's the problem, is it's always because there's some truth to it. But that's not the whole truth. And that's where the difficult, and I think that's the hard part, is taking a step back and rethinking it and looking at it and going, okay, what's really going on here? You know, taking the emotion out of it and attempting to look at it objectively and like that CBT shit, that cognitive behavioral therapy shit, where you just kind of, you take a step back and you re-examine your thoughts and the emotions coming from your thoughts. Well, you re-examine that thought and you're looking at the situation again and you go, okay, what's really going on here? And, you know, where am I responsible for this happening? And can I own that? And can I course correct? And also, why does this bother you so much? When you have way more important things to be focused on and concerned about, why are you dwelling on that? And why are you using that to make yourself feel bad, or at least justify not doing something? That's a lot of it. It's using it as an excuse to not do what you should be doing. And so that's, I think it's a big, you know, it's something I've been thinking about this week about, what I need to remain focused on and deal with in my own life. And I thought I'd share, because you know it's real easy to spot this in other people, because I also have a problem with it. Once again, society's fault, everybody. We all victimize ourselves, and it's society's fault. Yeah. Anyway, that's what I wanted to share today. I appreciate you guys stopping by for half an hour, and I hope you have a great rest of your day and evening. Be safe out there. Take care of yourselves, take care of your family and who you care about. This has been the Yes, I'm Still Sober podcast. I'm John Raven. We'll see you next week. Later.
Back down to earth again. The cold is creeping deep inside.